The dust has settled on the 49ers 2022 draft, and the club continues to make some interesting moves. General manager John Lynch re-signed a notable player for the 49ers defensive backfield, giving the team more options and more depth at the spot that was generally considered the weakest position on the team a year ago. Probably the most talked about selection of the 49ers draft was the third round pick of a running back. Ty Davis Price's college coach, longtime NFL running back Kevin Faulk, stops by to tell us all about his former pupil. The 49ers certainly picked the right year to go all in on their quarterback of the future. The 2022 NFL draft was bleak for the quarterback position, but still, the starting options for Jimmy Garoppolo have all but dried up. All that and more on this episode of 49ers Talk.
Welcome to another edition of 49ers Talk on NBCSportsBayArea.com. Introducing your host, Matt Maiocco.
Yes, this is 49ers Talk brought to you by Big O Tires. I'm Matt Maiocco with Jennifer Lee Chan. And good news for 49er fans, certainly the 49er fans south of the border, and good news for the people who cover the 49ers. Jennifer, we're going to Mexico City Thanksgiving week.
I am so excited. I've never been there. And even though it's technically an away game for the 49ers, I think the 49ers faithful are going to make it a home game for them, which is such a benefit for their season because it gives them another home game, really.
Yeah, well, at least it doesn't give them another road game. That's really good news. And, you know, we've been places, being in Chicago, and I know when we were walking around the parking lot at Lambeau Field before the game, and that was in the playoffs, as well as in Dallas before the game, invariably we would run into 49er fans from Mexico. So I have a suspicion that there will be a lot of 49er fans inside that stadium, Estadio Azteca, on November 21st, a Monday night game.
It'll be really exciting. And I think it's great that the 49ers are getting back into the international games. It's been a while. You went to the last one, and that was in London. That was how many seasons ago?
Yeah, I've actually been to London twice. 2013, and they played the Jaguars, and then 2010, when the 49ers played the Denver Broncos. And I was there when the 49ers played in Mexico City back in 2005. That was the very first NFL regular season game played outside of the United States, and the 49ers played the Arizona Cardinals. And the thing I remember about that was that, I mean, the 49ers scored like two defensive touchdowns like in the first 7 minutes of the game, and they went up 14-0, and then they didn't score again. But I really don't remember too much like sightseeing and doing stuff in Mexico City. But this time I do want to get out and experience it a little bit more because I've heard just absolutely great things about it. I have some friends who, when the schedule came out, immediately started texting me and telling me, I got a list of things for you to do. You're going to have a great time. You're going to eat very well. And here's one thing about this game. You know, the altitude is significant there. And the 49ers might be in a position, some teams have done this the last few times they've had NFL games in Mexico City. Teams have gone to the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs the week leading up to the game to get acclimated to the altitude, to the elevation before heading to Mexico City. So that's something where we might be spending the week before the game in Mexico City in Colorado.
You know, the altitude is no joke. It's funny when someone's mic'd up when they play Denver, there's always someone, probably multiple players on oxygen after they've been out on the field for a play or two. It's challenging, and acclimation would definitely be an assist to the team.
Yeah, so here are the numbers. Colorado Springs, where the Air Force Academy is, 67,000 feet above sea level. No, 6,700 feet. That 60,000, 67,000 feet would be
that
like-
That would be a lot.
That would be like at the moon, like you just step right off and hit the moon. No, it's 6,700 feet, and then Mexico City is 7,200 feet above sea level. So that'll be fun, but that's further down the road. We have other things Jennifer, to concern ourselves about right now and to talk about. And number one on the list, you know, the NFL draft just wrapped up, obviously, but I thought the 49ers made a pretty interesting move the day after the draft in that they signed Jason Verrett to a one-year contract. And if that sounds familiar, this is the fourth consecutive year that we have reported that the 49ers have signed Jason Verrett to a one-year contract.
You know, he's one of those guys, his story is one of the ones that I just root for. I want him to be able to get back to where he was at the beginning of last season. He was really looking good in training camp last year, played that first game. That's where he got injured. But I mean, I was ready to write just the biggest comeback story for him. And unfortunately, it ended up in another injury for him. He's had the worst luck, but he is such a great guy. He's even debated retiring before last year and his comeback last year. And so I was surprised that he was interested in coming back this year, but I mean, more power to him. I'm excited for him and I'm looking forward to him having success on the field this year.
Yeah, I think even the 49ers were, I don't know if they were surprised, but they certainly didn't know for certain that he wanted to play because, man, he has been through so much stuff. And there's only been two games. I think he entered the league in 2014. And he's a really good player. Like when he's out there and on the field, he's been a really good player. But only twice in his career has he played even as much as 13 games in a season. And all the other seasons are like, you know, four games or one game or zero games. And when I think back to that last year, because that happened week one in Detroit, and it happened middle of the fourth quarter when he went down with the ACL injury. And I was outside the 49ers locker room getting ready to do the post-game show. And when I saw that cart come up, I mean, he was absolutely devastated. It was heartbreaking to see him go into the locker room knowing that his season was over. And it was heartbreaking to see John Lynch, who was right there with him. I mean, it really was one of the more sad moments I've ever witnessed. And I remember thinking at that point, boy, I wonder if that's it for him, but it isn't it for him. And this is why this is a really interesting situation because last year, Laura and I debated like who are the most important defensive players on this team. And we both had Jason Verrett, like if not the most important defensive player, like top two or three, because the 49ers were so thin at cornerback that they needed him to stay healthy. They needed him to play at a high level. They needed him to pretty much take care of one side of the field, and then they could roll coverages and do stuff to help Emmanuel Mosley or whoever was going to be on the other side of the field. But now you look at the 49ers cornerback situation. They ended the season with Emmanuel Mosley and Ambry Thomas and really nobody else at the cornerback position. And now they have Charvarius Ward. They went out and signed him to the big money deal. And they still have Mosley and Ambry Thomas. But now they have Jason Verrett. And they have guys like Diamador Lenore, Darquez Dennard, Dante Johnson. And then they invested two draft picks in guys Sam Womack and Tariq Castro Fields. So it kind of makes me look at this and go, is it possible that the 49ers in one off season changed kind of like a weakness of their team into a strength? You know, is it possible that, you know, I think we all can agree the defensive line is the strongest unit of the team, but is it possible that the cornerback position now is just a step below defensive line when it comes to depth and overall position talent?
When you just list off all those players, you definitely think that, okay, this is a team that's got a really good secondary. And don't forget, and you know, as the safety, you've got Jimmy Ward, who's got a ton of experience. You know, he's not a cornerback. He's played kind of both places, but it's a really deep, experienced secondary that has a lot of talent. Got to say something about Jason Verrett. When you start watching football and trying to evaluate what players have different traits. And, you know, they always talk about when you watch those draft coverage shows, how the way a player's hips move is so important. Mm-hmm. When you watch the 49ers training camp practices and they go through those position drills, you can see the difference in the guys like Jimmy Ward and Jason Verrett. When they move their hips, they can change directions. Their upper body doesn't move. And that's what they mean by the swivel in their hips. And I didn't really realize it or didn't really notice the difference between the best players and, you know, mid-range players until I watched him, and the way his body moves while keeping his eyes one direction is really amazing. And you can see it when you go from the starters and they work their way down towards the guys who are maybe practice squatters. Those guys really, their way the body moves is very unique, and it's really interesting.
Yeah, in 2020, I had a coach with the 49ers tell me that the two best cover guys they had on their team were Jimmy Ward and Jason Verrett. And I just wonder, like, if Jason Verrett is healthy, and I'm not sure that, you know, would he be a starter? I don't know. You know, because Emmanuel Moseley and Ambry Thomas will be competing, or at least we thought they would be the ones competing opposite of Charvarius Ward. But could Jason Verrett maybe be the nickelback, you know, cover the slot receiver, an area where they're trying to upgrade with, you know, Kaywan Williams now with the Denver Broncos? So it just gives them a lot of flexibility when it comes to the 49ers defensive backfield, having Jason Verrett. And it kind of has come a little bit, not full circle, but it's come to, from the team absolutely needs Jason Verrett. That's what we were talking about entering the 2021 season, to now Jason Verrett is a luxury, and anything he gives them is a positive. And if he does win his way back onto the field in a significant role, that just makes the 49ers defense that much better.
You're absolutely right. I'm rooting for him 100%.
So the last podcast we did, and based on the feedback that I received on social media, we both received on social media, people love to hear from general manager John Lynch, assistant general manager Adam Peters, and the director of college scouting, Tariq Ahmad, talking about the 49ers day three picks. And it's interesting to just to hear the decision makers, kind of the thought process, you know, what got these certain players on the radar. And it's funny because most fans, and I guess I would put myself and you in the same category, Jennifer, like, we're not out there watching film of 300 prospects. A lot of the information we get are from people outside the NFL, and that's how a lot of people form their opinions. It's what the, you know, the draftniks out there are saying. And so if someone just doesn't fit with where the draftniks think a guy should fit, everybody throws their arms up and says, well, you know, what's this team doing? And how could they take that player in that spot? He would have been there in the fifth round. And there's one person in particular that I'm going to talk about in relation to that. But before we get to that, I did a piece at NBCSportsBayArea.com where I kind of looked at where I thought the rookie draft class, how they would contribute year one. And maybe it might surprise you, I didn't put Drake Jackson number one. He was the draft pick, second round pick, 49ers first overall selection in this draft, because they didn't have a first round draft pick, but the 49ers took him at 61 overall. He's the edge rusher from USC. And I know, you being an alum of the University of Spoiled Children, that you watched him play. USC, being an alum of USC. Were you a rower there? Is this true?
I was on the rowing team. I was the coxswain for the women's varsity team.
Was this one of those varsity blues scandal things, or were you really a rower?
I actually did all the workouts that the rowers did, but I was actually the one who is kind of like an onboard coach. So I had the mic, steered the boat. But that was before there were scholarships for the rowing team. So,
oh, okay. Man. Okay. Well, Jennifer, steer me straight on this. Drake Jackson, 27 career games, 12 and a half sacks. When the 49ers spot came up to pick, I thought they might go with Nick Benito from Oklahoma, an edge rusher, highly productive. So what did you see? Tell me a little bit about Drake Jackson. We heard him, you know, he spoke to us here on 49ers Talk and spoke to the media. He's a charming guy, great personality. What would you expect Drake Jackson to accomplish year one with the 49ers? And we're just talking year one. I mean, I think we know that he has tremendous athletic ability, seems to be very coachable, highly motivated, all that. But it's tough to just step from the college ranks into the NFL defensive line rotation. So what could we expect?
I think the biggest knock on Drake Jackson was that his weight fluctuated so much in college. So he's been up to 275. He was down to 245. So that's a big jump in weight. And the reason behind that is all the different coaches that they went through, two defensive coordinators at USC, two defensive line coaches when he was there in three seasons. So they kept asking him to do different things. Now, kind of similar to Jimmy Ward when he was with the 49ers, going back from safety to corner and back again, they asked him to do so many different things. You know, you can be great at a lot of things and not a master of one thing. And that's kind of where Drake Jackson is. He, I think, will do much better under Chris Kocurek, being asked only to do a certain thing. And I believe that'll be being the bookend to Nick Bosa. So when he's asked to be just an edge rusher and get his hand on the ground, I think it's going to be so beneficial for him to have a coach like that who's going to be consistent in what they want, not to have him go, oh, let's have you play over here upright. Let's have you play in the center. I think they're going to have one job for him, and I think he's going to benefit from that. He's got a lot of competition. You know, you'd look at Samson Ebukam, who is on the side. There's so many guys that he's going to compete with. Kerry Hyder is back. It's going to be very difficult for him to get on the field a lot, but I think he's going to consistently grow and get better because I don't think he's scratched the surface on what he can do, especially because he hasn't had that consistent coaching throughout his career.
Yeah, and that's why I don't necessarily expect him to put up big numbers. I think what you talked about, if they're able to just say, you're an edge rusher, you know, we're going to use you only on nickel downs. Let's really refine your pass rush moves and get you coached up there, that would be very beneficial to him and probably for the team too. But yeah, I mean, you mentioned Ebukam and Kerry Hyder Jr., but it doesn't stop there. You know, in addition, obviously, to Nick Bosa, there's Jordan Willis, Charles Aminihu, and Kamoko Touré. Those guys are all going to be competing for that job of, you know, when the game is on the line, when it's a money situation, those guys want to be out there on the other side. And so that's why I don't necessarily expect Drake Jackson to step in just as a rookie and dominate and be a huge force. And I don't think they need him to. They just need him to be very effective, you know, in the snaps he get. You know, he might play 15 to 20 snaps a game. Or if he's really good, then those numbers go up. So we'll see where that goes. But the guy that I thought when I did this piece that might actually make the biggest impact year one is probably the most controversial pick that the 49ers had in this draft. And that is Ty Davis Price, the running back from LSU. I did not expect them to take a running back day one of the draft. And I guess they didn't, because they took Ty Davis Price day two, because they didn't have a draft pick day one. I did expect them to take a running back at some point. So it was a little bit of a surprise that they took a running back where they did, and probably maybe even more of a surprise which running back it was. But after kind of looking at it, you know, it makes sense, because this guy is an every down type of running back. And that's, I think, what they were looking for. It also doesn't necessarily paint Trey Sermon in a positive light, seeing that they selected him in the third round a year ago, and he had a really difficult time getting off the sideline, and Elijah Mitchell beat him out.
Yeah, Trey Sermon, I think it's, you know, they're disappointed in how he performed. They are really looking for a guy to hit the hole fast. And that's what Elijah Mitchell has done for them. And I think it'll be interesting to see how Ty Davis Price does get used. How often is he on the field? that's the thing also with the running backs. I mean, the reason Deebo Samuel became a running back in the second half of the season is because they had so many injuries mm-hmm. in that room. So if they can get a guy like Ty Davis Price to be able to take reps, be able to run between the tackles, take hits, and stay healthy, that was something that, you know, Kyle Shanahan said in previous press conferences that, you know, we had to take a running back. We have gone through four or five guys in a season, and it's been a different running back in the lead position that's been the top rusher on the team since Kyle Shanahan's been the head coach. So they might get a little consistency here with a more durable back.
Yeah, I was just looking this up. Yeah, you mentioned the injuries they had. I mean, they lost Raheem Mostert after two carries, and we were all surprised week one of the regular season when Elijah Mitchell was up and Trey Sermon was down. But check this out. And this is going to take you back in time here, refresh your memory. But from September 14th of last season to September 22nd, these are the running backs the 49ers brought into their building. Kerryon Johnson on the practice squad. They claimed Trenton Cannon off waivers. They signed Jaquez Patrick from the Cincinnati Bengals practice squad, and they signed Chris Thompson to the practice squad. So they were just bringing guys in basically off the street because of all the injuries they had. Elijah Mitchell missed six games during the regular season. You know, Jeff Wilson injured his knee, like standing up in the locker room during OTAs. Yeah, Jamichael Hasty was injured. Trey Sermon was injured. I mean, everybody was injured through the course of that season. So that's why they got Ty Davis Price where they did. Now, I did this thing during the draft, and I don't want to brag or anything, but I was 100%, Jennifer, whenever the 49ers would come on the clock or at least get close to it, I would put a list up about three or four names that the 49ers might consider with their next draft pick. And again, don't want to brag, but I was 100% on those. Oh, yes, should I mention I was 100% inaccurate on those? Okay. Well,
small details.
Thanks for not amplifying that. But yes, when the 49ers went on the clock with Ty Davis Price, the number one guy I had on the board at that point was Nick Cross, a safety from Maryland. Now, they took Ty Davis Price. Nick Cross went three spots later to the Indianapolis Colts. And to me, if you're going to look at it, who should they have taken or who could they have taken there? I think Ty Davis Price, what was the surprise? Nick Cross would have been, I think, someone that people would have said that makes a lot of sense. But I'm assuming 49ers just think that Ty Davis Price is a better player. You know, all those people I talked about, you know, Lynch, Peters, Ahmad, those guys who are running the draft, Kyle Shanahan, they obviously have a role in mind for Ty Davis Price where they maybe didn't see Nick Cross as a player. Indianapolis took him. I forget if I said that, but anyway, they obviously didn't think that there was a clear path for Nick Cross to just win a starting job with Talanoa Hufanga there, Tarvarius Moore there, and George Odom there. And then the other guy that the 49ers could have taken would have been Brian Robinson. So if they're going to take a running back at 93, they could have taken Brian Robinson. He went five spots later. He's a running back from Alabama. He went to Washington. And I mean, looking at these two guys, Robinson was more productive in college. He also carried a heck of a lot more at Alabama than Ty Davis Price did at LSU. Robinson's also 23 years old, where Davis Price is 21 years old. So, you know, Ty Davis Price is, their playing size is roughly the same, speed about the same. But the 49ers clearly decided through all their research that Ty Davis Price was the guy that they wanted in that spot. And it can be second guessed and everything else. But through their research and everything else that went into it, he's the guy they came up with. And I think he's going to I'd be surprised if he doesn't have a significant role as a rookie.
You know, it says a couple of things about the 49ers. It says that they have confidence in the guys that you mentioned, Talanoa Hufanga, along with Jimmy Ward, of course, and George Odom and Tarvarius Moore. So they have confidence enough in those guys. And then you look at also, you've got Fred Warner, Dre Greenlaw in front of them. They've got those cornerbacks that we just talked about. So you look at the strength of the defense as a whole, and if they don't have a safety that they draft early in that position, they're confident enough in the defense as a whole that they didn't need to spend the draft pick there. Now, I think they had less confidence in the running backs room. So that's why I think they went with running back instead.
Yeah. And one thing, I think Tarvarius Moore is somebody to keep an eye on, because a year ago at this time, I thought that he would win the starting job opposite of Jimmy Ward, or back there with Jimmy Ward at the safety position. And then he had the Achilles tear in the offseason program, missed the entire year. And this weird element of the CBA, if a player entering the final year of his contract is on PUP the entire season, which Tarvarius Moore was, then the contract tolls. So the 49ers are getting basically a year that they never would have expected out of Tarvarius Moore because of the injury. So he's someone to keep an eye on for sure, to see if he can compete with Talanoa Hufanga for that job. And Jaquaski Tartt is still out there as an unrestricted free agent, but it certainly did not sound all that encouraging for the 49ers when you heard John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan talk about him. It didn't really sound like that was a high priority. But that's something that if he remains unsigned down the road and they just don't see much at all from the safety position, they could possibly go back and re-sign Jaquaski Tartt as long as he's out there available.
Yeah, that was interesting. I think John Lynch was almost surprised that he was asked about Jaquaski Tartt. It seemed like that. He's like, oh, no, we haven't spoken to him. But, you know, he's a guy that plays very well.
Yeah. And then finally, like Kyle Shanahan kind of rolled in there and kind of tried to save the day by saying, hey, you know, we have a lot of respect for him and we would never close the door on him. But it certainly sounded like if the door hasn't been closed, it's just maybe a little sliver open there. Maybe you can slide like a piece of paper through the opening. But I think the first thing they want to see, right, would be how Talanoa Hufanga, how he adapts, maybe even George Odom and also Tarvarius Moore, to see if they feel good about that safety position. So we talked a lot about Ty Davis Price. And when we come back on 49ers Talk, we're going to be joined by former LSU running backs coach Kevin Faulk. Now, he played 13 seasons in the NFL, all with the New England Patriots, won multiple Super Bowls, went to 5 Super Bowls as a player. He's in the Patriots Hall of Fame. He's in the LSU Athletic Hall of Fame. And he coached Ty Davis Price. And he will share his insights into the player and the person the 49ers selected in the third round of the draft. And he will join us right after this word from Big O Tires.
Now through May 8th at your locally owned Big O Tires, save up to $100 on Firestone, Bridgestone, or Pirelli brand tires. Plus, get a free basic installation with your purchase of a set of 4 tires. See participating store for details and find additional cash saving offers at BigOTires.com.
Okay, we're back on 49ers Talk, and probably of all the 49ers draft picks, The one that was considered the biggest surprise was on Friday evening when the 49ers used their third round pick to select a running back from LSU, Ty Davis Price. And I'm joined now by a man who knows him very, very well. LSU legend, longtime NFL player, 3-time Super Bowl champ with the New England Patriots, and the man who coached Ty Davis Price at LSU, Kevin Faulk. Kevin, thank you so much for joining us on 49ers Talk.
Paul, like I told you earlier, thanks for having me anytime for one of my guys that I've coached that I've had a really good relationship with over the years.
Yeah, I mean, he was a Baton Rouge guy, right?
Right.
So I would assume your relationship with him started long before you actually coached him.
Oh, definitely. With most of the guys on the football team, you know, you've had a relationship with them throughout the course of their their high school careers, would let them come into camps, you working camps there, and you just hearing the buzz around town about these kids. So yes, we've had a relationship with Ty for a very long time.
So he was on that national championship team in 2019, didn't get a whole lot of action, but did have 6 touchdowns. So from an early age as a freshman, what did you see in him that made you think that he could develop into the guy he became?
Well, coming into college, you can see, you know, what type of back he could have been. Ty was a track star in high school that ran like a 10-4, 10-500. And I think it showed when he ran a 40-yard dash this year. But just the ability to get better, to understand, you know, when he got to college that I still have to get myself to a level to where if I want to play in the NFL. And he did that. It, just like any other kid, it didn't happen right away. You hit that freshman wall sometimes, and that happens. And he bounced back from it and understood that next year I got to work even that much harder.
What did you see throughout his 3 seasons there where you saw the biggest jumps that he made? In what areas were you most impressed with his improvements?
Like any other high school kid, it's consistency. Consistency with everything. Everybody wants to go to the NFL, but there's a lot that goes into it. To not just making it there, but sustaining it there, staying in that league. You have to be consistent in all areas and all those little areas that us as athletes tend not to think about, but the coach is thinking about it. For instance, being on time for a meeting, having a pen or taking notes when you're supposed to be taking notes. I don't care how long you've been there, but it's just those little things that goes along with the consistency factor of you playing for a long time in the NFL.
With your long career, when you're coaching a guy like Ty, do you kind of think to what can I do as a coach to get him NFL ready? Is that like a conscious thing that you're doing as a coach when you bring in a highly talented guy like Ty Davis Price?
Crazy thing, you do that with everyone. That's me. I'm doing it with everyone. Yes, that's just the mindset because – yes, you may have walk-on guys that may not play all the time, but those walk-on guys could make an NFL roster and probably play longer than some of the other guys because they're going to play special teams. So you give that input to every last guy you're coaching because you know that anybody can have that opportunity to play for a very long time.
Yeah, and then his final year there, his junior year, he rushes for 1,000 yards, 6 touchdowns, has that incredible game against Florida. What do you remember about that game? You guys just kept feeding him the ball, and he kept running with it.
Well, I remember the start of the year, how we started the year off with bad news that one of our guys wouldn't be able to be there, one of our running backs, and it was going to be him and Ty. But like I told him, I think that took a burden off his shoulders, and he knew at that point, you know, they're going to ride my shoulders now, so I got to be ready, you know, to go forward, move forward, and he did that. The maturity of him, understanding who he was, what he had to do in certain situations of a football game, like you mentioned the Florida game. If we can run that counterplay 10 more times, they'll run that counterplay 10 more times in that Florida game, and he understood that. If I had to run that counterplay 10 more times, I'm going to run that counterplay 10 more times. And I think that's the thing that really helped Ty his junior year was the maturity level, understanding what it took.
Kevin, I mentioned that it was kind of a surprise for people here in the Bay Area when the 49ers took a running back in that 3rd round. And even if you look at like the draft publications, Ty wasn't up there considered anyway nationally among the very top running backs. So what was he up there in your mind, or what were people missing when it came to the, obviously the 49ers thought very highly of him, but what were other people missing, do you think, when it came to the evaluation of Ty Davis Price in this draft?
I think just more reps. If you go back to his college career, his freshman year, he didn't get too many reps because Clyde Davis-Helaire was there. Sophomore year, he split reps between him, John Emery, a couple of other backs on the team. So he didn't get the bulk of the reps that he got his junior year. And when he did get those reps, he produced in those areas. And you just look at his attributes. Ty Davis ran at, 211, 212. He's probably going to play at about 220, 221. He has smaller back attributes, jump cutting, exploding through the hole after the jump cut. He had the attributes. He just has to understand that he has to stay consistent with his weight and maintain that focus.
Yeah, was he up around 230, his playing weight in college?
A couple of years, like early on, yes. Because his mindset and dad mindset early on in his career was he had to be thicker to take on that pounding, take on those SEC linebackers. But like I told him, if you're explosive, it don't matter how thick you are because you're going to run through guys.
Right. And you know that the 49ers running game a little bit with Kyle Shanahan and how they like that zone scheme. How does he fit into that?
I think he fits in well. I think he fits in with the other guys that they have there, especially Elijah, who's right here from Louisiana, ULL, University of Louisiana, followed his career a little bit. So he's done great things for you guys up in San Francisco. And I just think those two guys will complement each other real well.
So we can see the physical attributes and the highlights and all that, but what are the 49ers getting when they drafted Ty Davis Price, just the whole package, the person?
Oh, they got somebody that's willing to learn, ready to learn, and still has a lot more to learn. As a young man, as a young running back, get to the NFL, and I think he went to the right offense, you know, to get that fit. It's going to be a little different for him, but I think he's going to adjust to it.
All right. Well, Kevin, anything else you feel like we should know about Ty Davis Price?
Fun, loving kid. Mom and dad in his life. Just had a baby girl, and I think that's one of the things that really set him up for that junior year that he had, because he was really focused and understood what was up ahead of him.
All right. Kevin Falk, hey, thank you so much for joining us on 49ers Talk.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Win a Lexus, cash, and more this month at Graton Resort and Casino. Play to enter the $300,000 Drive Away in Luxury Lexus and Cash giveaway on April 29th, where you could win a Lexus. Plus, more ways to win than anywhere else. Multiplier Wednesdays get up to 7 times the points. Thursdays turn points into slot play. And win up to $15,000 in the Good Fortune slot tournaments. Learn more at GratonResortCasino.com. Complete rules available at the Rewards Center.
We are back on 49ers Talk. And you know one of the interesting things about this last draft, probably the most interesting thing, well, maybe it's about the same. Wide receiver, the run on wide receiver is very interesting, but also the anti-run on quarterbacks. I mean, think about this, Jennifer. In the 2021 draft, the first three picks were quarterbacks, including, obviously, number 3 overall, Trey Lance. In 2022, this last draft, the third quarterback was taken at number 86 overall. So I guess perhaps we can say that any team that wanted a quarterback should have addressed that need in free agency or with trades, and that the 49ers picked the correct year to make their move and go get the quarterback that they envision being their franchise quarterback.
Yes, and that's kind of what a lot of the draft pundits have said, that the 2021 class is very good. 22 is a little bit of a drop off in talent. And then again,
it's a horrible draft class. It was atrocious. Can we just say it?
Okay, all right. I was trying to be nice, Matt.
Well, okay. But in all fairness, you know, We will see what this draft class amounts to. Only one quarterback taken in the first round, Kenny Pickett with Pittsburgh. But man, on paper, let's put it this way. Maybe it wasn't atrocious, but the NFL teams that were drafting sure thought it was.
What I thought was interesting is that there was so much hype after the combine, right? There were at the beginning of it, before the pro days, there was talk about how, you know, the quarterbacks, they weren't a great class. And then after the combine, guys threw against, you know, without defensive backs there, you know, they were throwing. There was so much hype following that, and how three quarterbacks could go in the first round, maybe the first two rounds. And then it kind of all settled back down when it was actually draft time. One guy got picked in the first round and then the two later in the third round. And again, there are teams that could be looking forward to 2023, where the draft class is again supposed to be much better for quarterbacks.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, looking out a year, that's kind of what it looks like. It's going to be, it should be a much better year for quarterbacks. So let's take a look from the perspective of the 49ers and Jimmy Garoppolo. You know, I think there were some teams where you went into this draft thinking, well, if Carolina doesn't address the quarterback situation, you know, they might be in play for a veteran like Jimmy Garoppolo or Baker Mayfield. Seattle the same way, maybe even Houston the same way. So here's the deal. Seattle did not take a quarterback. So right now they're rolling with Geno Smith and Drew Lock.
And Houston didn't draft a quarterback. They're going with Davis Mills. So you, yeah, it's those two spots are the ones that are possible landing spots, maybe for Jimmy Garoppolo as we get closer to the season.
Yeah. And it sounds, you know, Seattle's kind of weird. They might be in the situation where they're going to throw all their eggs in the 2023 basket. And so they might just roll with those two guys, Geno Smith and Drew Lock. Houston, I could still see Garoppolo landing there, but it wouldn't be as the starter, you know, coming in. It would be as the backup. And right now, I just think that, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo will be a backup somewhere in the NFL this coming season. You know, when his shoulder heals and he can pass the physical and all that, he's going to find some home. And I'm waffling, of course, because the home might be with the 49ers. I don't know. It's just kind of a weird situation considering he's already said his goodbyes and teammates, you know, were saying goodbye to him in the locker room after, you know, the game. Or heck, Kyle Juszczyk said goodbye to him in the locker room before the regular season finale in LA. So just a weird situation. But the teams that did address the quarterback position, we mentioned Pittsburgh took Kenny Pickett in the first round. Carolina had number six overall. And there was some thought, are they going to take a quarterback number six overall? Well, they didn't. But they did take Matt Corral in the third round. Atlanta took Desmond Ridder in the third round. And Tennessee took Malik Willis in the third round. So I just wonder with those teams, you know, Carolina already having Sam Darnold, Atlanta already having Marcus Mariota, Tennessee already having Ryan Tannehill. I don't see any of those teams bringing in a veteran guy like Jimmy Garoppolo. And oh, by the way, did you hear what Ryan Tannehill had to say when it came to his thoughts on helping groom a rookie quarterback?
I absolutely did. And I've got to say, I immediately thought of Jimmy Garoppolo and how I don't think those words would ever come out of his mouth. They didn't last year. He was such a great teammate for Trey Lance. Trey Lance spoke about how he learned so much from Jimmy. And I think that's one reason why it may work out for Jimmy Garoppolo to return to the 49ers this coming season, just because he gets along with everybody. He's loved in that locker room. We know that Trey Lance is a running quarterback, and that kind of puts people up for potential injury. If he does get hurt, Jimmy Garoppolo is able to step right in. I know they have confidence in Nate Sudfeld, but looking at the relationship that they have, I don't think it would be that awkward if he happened to be on the 49ers roster again in 2022.
Yeah. And so what Ryan Tannehill said was basically he's not there to mentor Malik Willis. Like, he's just going to do his job. And if Malik Willis learns from watching him, that's fine. But his job description is to play quarterback for the Tennessee Titans and not to babysit or help the backup in any way. And, you know, it reminded me actually what Joe Montana has said. You know, that's the way Joe Montana viewed his situation with Steve Young. You know, he viewed it as, hey, this guy's here to take my job. I'm not going to undermine him. I'm not going to sabotage him. But, you know, my job is to win football games. My job is not to mentor the backup quarterback. So, I mean, I can kind of see where he would have that approach. He probably didn't word it quite the same way. I mean, probably the way to say it would be, you know, I'm going to help him, you know,
or to not say it at all.
To not say it at all.
Think it. Yeah. I can understand a guy thinking it, but why would you ever verbalize it? That just is beyond me.
Yeah. It's not the way to win brownie points, I don't think. Yeah.
So. Definitely not. Definitely not with Malik Willis. That's for sure.
No, definitely not. So anyway, yeah. So it looks like the 49ers definitely made the right decision to make the move for the quarterback the year that they did. So the 49ers offseason program is going, and Deebo Samuel's situation with him is still status quo. And when we look at the calendar, like the next like dates where something could happen is the mandatory minicamp. That's not until mid-June, June 14th through the 16th. And so here's the situation. It really, I mean, there's been no skin off anybody's noses for Deebo Samuel not being around the 49ers. And right now, there are hurt feelings, and you know those can easily be repaired. But when things start to get real a little bit would be for that mandatory minicamp, because everything up to this point is voluntary. But if Deebo Samuel were to skip the mandatory minicamp, he would incur fines of basically $15,000 the first day, $31,000 the next, and then $46,000 the day after that. So a three-day minicamp, he would lose $93,000, or stand to lose $93,000. So that is probably the next date where we can kind of circle and go, okay, what's going on with Deebo? Because it really doesn't sound, I mean, the 49ers want to make this right with Deebo Samuel. They really have no other choice. But doesn't it sound to you, Jennifer, that they're confident that they can make this work?
It does. Every time we talk to John Lynch, Kyle Shanahan, you know, they think that there's going to be a resolution. And honestly, in these types of situations, money cures everything, right? As long as they give him a contract that feels he's worth, then I think it works out. And you looked at the AJ Brown contract that he got. It sounds like 4 years for $100 million, but really when you take in that fourth year of the rookie contract, it makes it about $20 million a year, which is kind of what you and I both said would be right about where he falls. And it seems like that would be when you look at the contracts for Tyreek Hill, Davante Adams, Stephon Diggs, they're a little bit higher. They have a lot more experience. They're in their third contract. They've proven themselves to be able to change how a defense looks at them and plans for them. So while Deebo had a great season in 2021, he hasn't hit those consecutive seasons back to back yet, which would put him in that upper echelon of pay. So when you're looking at that, I think it's doable. And I think the 49ers are willing to make that work for them.
Yeah. And again, we don't know, you know, the 49ers haven't said, and I'm not sure they even know, because I don't know that there's been a whole lot of direct communication. But if Deebo Samuel doesn't want to be lining up in the backfield, and I don't think they will need him in the backfield much anymore, but if he doesn't want to be doing that anymore, then all of a sudden, you know, his price, you know, his value drops a little bit, I think, because Deebo Samuel is a good wide receiver. No doubt about it. He's better than good. I mean, he's a 1400 yard receiver, but I don't think he's up to that level of those names you mentioned, as far as just the season in, season out, the nuanced ability to play the position, the consistency. So I don't know that one great season like he had this last year raises him up to that higher echelon of being the absolute top paid wide receiver in the game, unless he says willingly, I want to line up in the backfield. I want to be, you know, a guy that, you know, does more than jet sweeps and gadget plays. I want to, you know, I want to go for 1,000. Obviously he's not, but just, I want to be incorporated into the offense as this threat where just put the ball in my hands and let me go. So we'll see how all that turns out. So the 49ers ended the draft, 9 draft picks. They also reached contract agreements with 14 of the undrafted guys. The one guy, I guess, that kind of stands out to me, and I talked about my perfect, my perfect record on those draft board. The one guy I kept mentioning throughout was Donovan West, the center from Arizona State. I think I started mentioning him like in the 5th or 6th round and then just kept mentioning him. He did not get drafted, but the 49ers did sign him as an undrafted rookie. It's going to be really tough for any of those undrafted guys to make the team. So when you look at those names or positions of need or anything else, anything that comes to your mind, Jen?
Well, just the fact that we thought they were going to take a center from maybe the fourth or fifth round on, but then they didn't, because the future of Alex Mack is still undetermined. Mm-hmm. He has not made an announcement. The 49ers have not made one either. Every time we've spoken to John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan, they're like, well, all signs are pointing towards him returning, but we're not quite sure yet. That doesn't strike a whole lot of confidence. I mean, it sounded better after the draft than it did prior to it, when all they could talk about was the fact that he got married in Ireland. So, I don't know where that whole arrangement stands, and none of us do. So I think taking a center in that undrafted free agent class now, it's going to be hard for him to win a job, of course, but to be able to have a guy to be there for training camp, you know, to be able to take reps, I think that's important for the team.
Yeah, it's almost like they're, I don't know, I almost feel like if Alex Mack doesn't come back, that Daniel Brunskill or Jake Brendel would be the guy. And I guess my money would be on Daniel Brunskill. They did select a guy in the sixth round, Nick Zakel from Fordham. And he played offensive tackle at Fordham, but they do think that he could be a center down the road. But I think that's a whole lot to ask of a rookie who's never played the position to get in there and, you know, compete for a starting job as a rookie. So
especially for what Kyle Shanahan asks of his offensive lineman. Now, Alex Mack is in there. He's directing traffic. He's communicating with the quarterback. To have a second year quarterback in Trey Lance and a rookie center, that just sounds like a recipe for disaster.
Wow. Disaster. Yeah, man. I called the quarterback class atrocious. You're calling the potential center situation disastrous. We're just like sounding the alarms here on 49ers talk.
And not everybody's reported yet. We're getting to it right away.
We're in midseason form here. Hey, speaking of midseason form, Jennifer, what are you doing on Wednesday, June 1st?
I believe I'm going to be with you at the Letters to 87 Legacy Series.
Yes. So this is going to be great. It's kind of a Hall of Fame themed fundraiser for the Golden Heart Fund, Dwight Clark Legacy event, June 1 at the Lesher Center for the Arts in Walnut Creek. Check out this lineup: Bryant Young, Terrell Owens, Steve Young, Charles Haley, John Lynch will be there, Patrick Willis, Eric Armstead. Tickets are $87. And they go to the proceeds go to Dwight Clark's charity of choice, the Golden Heart Fund. You can find out more about this event at DwightClarkAward.com. It should be a great time. It will not be atrocious. It will not be disastrous. It will be one heck of a fun time.
Now, I didn't make it to the last one, but I was at the first one. And I've got to say, just those guys chopping it up, sitting in the chairs, telling stories is so much fun. The stuff that you don't get to read about, you don't get to hear about, the locker room stories, they're so great. And they are so willing to sit there and tell all of them. I think it is not to be missed.
Yes. We hope to see you there at the Lesher Center for the Arts on Wednesday, June 1. Until next time, we're going to take a step back. Hey, maybe next 49ers Talk podcast, we'll talk a little bit about what's going on around the NFC West and kind of see what the 49ers have cooking in relation to those other teams that they're going to be competing against, and kind of maybe contrast and compare off seasons. And that'll be next time on 49ers Talk.
Thanks for listening to 49ers Talk with Matt Maiocco. Please rate, review, and subscribe for free on your podcast provider.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know, with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/youknowbusiness.